He instructs people to discipline with the intent of preserving the relationship, not the reputation. Now, let me discuss that. Let me unpack that for a little bit, because it's kind of, it's a little bit difficult to understand. What happens when our children misbehave is we often, I would say, take that personally. Anybody know what I'm talking about? Right? When your children misbehave, you take that personally. Let's give an example here. We'll speak in examples. Let's say your child gets in trouble at school for talking back to a teacher and sent to the principal's office, which might or might not have happened to your pastor at some point in his life. It's just rumors out there that ended up happening. How many, if you went into the principal's office, right? I can imagine, again, might or might not happen, my parents in the principal's office with their son. If you went into the principal's office, you take that as a reflection on you, right? When my kid misbehaves, when my daughter, Jeanette, Julia, it's like, oh my gosh. You take this as a reflection on you. And what happens is in that moment, you're experiencing shame and you're experiencing embarrassment. And you know, one of the big things you're experiencing, how many people just feel inadequacy, right? You feel inadequate. And we are so preoccupied with our emotions and our embarrassment and our frustration. And what happens is because our reputation here has been damaged, right? We take this behavior personally, and because our reputation has been damaged, oftentimes we discipline out of the damage and the shame and embarrassment to our reputation, not necessarily what's going on with the child, the relationship with the kid, right? So what happens is we're not, for the most part, we're not even thinking about, again, if your kid's in the principal's office, and, you know, we're not thinking about why is my kid acting out like this? Right? What's going on? How am I going to repair this relationship with my son or daughter, with between myself and them, between myself and the teacher, between them and the principal, right? We often become so preoccupied with this that we're like, we discipline here out of our own reputation, right? Here's another example. You're at a friend's house for dinner, right? And one of their kids is misbehaving, is just off the rails, which again might or might not happen if you come to my house for dinner, right? And how many people in that moment, right? So you're at your friend's house and you're having dinner and their kid's just running amok and you're just, how many people in that moment are thinking to themselves, geez Louise, that poor child has the worst parents in the world. They must be so deprived to act like that, right? How many people, for the most part, they kind of think like, wow, a kid maybe had too much sugar, maybe he skipped a nap, maybe there's just some external kind of stuff going on. But what happens, let me say this, is what happens is in that moment, you're not projecting the child's misbehavior. You're not projecting the child's misbehavior onto the parents thinking like, oh, it's all the parents' fault, right? But what happens is we do that to ourselves, right? So when our child misbehaves, we're taking all that shame and that guilt and that embarrassment and that inadequacy onto ourselves, but nobody else is doing that, right? So we're thinking about our own reputation. What ends up happening is if a lot of times when we discipline, when we parent based on our reputation, right? It's just selfish parenting. Are you with me on that?
Care so much about our reputation.
People do.
But why?
Well, that's for another sermon, right? So I would say because this ends up as selfish parenting because we just end up consumed with ourself, and we're not, again, when Stanley says this, one of the things I think is so brilliant is that when I discipline, when I began to think about this, when let's just say this is just might or might not happen, when Julia misbehaves, right? And it's sometimes she does it in public and it's embarrassing. We've seen the kid flailing on the floor in the grocery store, right? And we're embarrassed, but we have to think, we got to kind of get our own ego, our own reputation out of the way and focus on the child. I think this is, for me, this was a subtle paradigm shift in disciplining and parenting, right? Because I think oftentimes, especially as a young parent, I'm so concerned about my reputation. I'm so concerned about what our family looks like. I'm so concerned that the external behavior that our child shows is presentable to the outside world, right? that I miss a lot of times this disciplining for our relationship, right? For the relationship that I have with my child, for the relationship that my child has with others that she might have broken, right? So I would say we begin with this. Again, this was so helpful when Stanley talked about this because, and as I began to unpack it, this getting this reputation, getting my ego, getting my own kind of, my own ideal of perfection out of the way and say, I want to parent and I want to discipline for this relationship with my child. That's helpful, right? Isn't that helpful to think about that? Again, when your kid, small kids, middle school age kids, high school age kids, grown kids, right? That you discipline with this kind of intent of preserving the relationship, right? Oh, here is the meeting that I had. There I am when I was four. I don't know what that is. I was scrambling on Google Images. Yeah. One other thing that Cloud and Townsend point out too, and this kind of goes into, they talk about responsibility, right? And they say that they were asked a question at one point in one of their seminars, and they said, a woman said, hey, you know, when an adult child kind of grows up, how much of who they are is, say, their own kind of choices and responsibility, and how much is their parents? And they both got out a piece of paper, and they both wrote down this number, and they both at the same time wrote down 70-30, that they believe that kind of who a child is 70% of their own choices and makings and what they've done, right? And that only 30% is a parent responsibility. Isn't that interesting? Would you guys agree with that? No? No? You'd flip it? Wow.
I agree with
it. We'll have to come back to this one. But again, I want to say this. When you're disciplining your child, when child's misbehaving, take a deep breath. Think about the relationship you want to preserve and the relationship you want to flourish. Not your reputation, not your ego, not your embarrassment, etc. So that's the first thing. Second thing I want to say about discipline and about behavior is this. Here's another controversial statement from these guys. I love this one. You cannot make a child behave. Mm-hmm. Agree or disagree?
It's true.
Huh?
It's true.
Disagree? Who disagrees with that statement? I'll tell you, I'll make my child behave right here. Come on, did that make you behave, Melissa? Cannot make. How many people agree with that statement?
How many people have no clue?
Here's what they say. Here's what's so fascinating about this. I thought this was really interesting. I thought this is really helpful as far as discipline and behavior. So they say that you can't make a child misbehave, right? This is what they claim. And then they say this. They say, but you can structure choices and consequences that help your children choose rightly. And then they say this great last line, your power lies in following up on promised consequences, right? Your power lies in following up on promised consequences. With this, I just say, as you think about this, with parenting, and as I've been trying to do this, my wife and I think my wife does this a lot better than I do, is my wife is able to structure, like I just kind of, when my kid misbehaves, I just want to go here right away, right? This is my kind of first response, and I'll get in control of the situation real quick. And not necessarily a spoon, but some sort of a physical touch or like an arm grab or like, hey, this is what's going to happen right now. I'm going to tell you what to do, right? My wife is way better at saying, here's your choice, right? And here's what, if you choose this, this is going to be your consequence, or you can choose right and you won't have a consequence, right? And then she's very good at following up in those promised consequences, right? And with the choices and the consequences, a lot of times as parents, we make either empty threats. You guys know what I'm talking about? Where are my empty threaters out there, right? I'm going to spank you 30 times if you don't, you know, or whatever. Of course, you're not going to spank them 30 times, right? Or you make, I was trying to figure out a way, I was trying to have my wife help me, the lies of threats, like the false threats. So, for example, here's what I'm thinking of. We're going over to her sister's house tonight for a birthday dinner. And let's say that Julie or Jeanette would misbehave when we got home from church today or whatever. And then what would I say? If you don't go take your nap, we're not going tonight to Rochelle's house. Well, of course we're going to go. It's just a lie. Like, of course we're going to go. There's no way in the world that we're not going to go. But I've done that. My mom's like, you do that all the time. I do it all the time. You know what I mean? I'm like, no, I'm serious. We will not go. So with this, with when you give them the consequences and the choices, make sure that they're not empty or make sure they're not lies, right? Give them choices and consequences that are actual, that are realistic, that are tied to the behavior that they're making, right? So that when they make that poor choice, you know, if they don't want to listen to you, right, then you have consequences that are appropriate for that. And then you have to follow up on those promised consequences. They use this, Cloud and Townsend use this phrase, they call it too bad for me, right? And here's what they say about too bad for me. Let me share about this. There was this mom who, I guess, went to one of their seminars, and she had a child who was really difficult, right? And so she goes to this seminar, and she begins to listen to Cloud and Townsend. Cloud and Townsend just talk about boundaries, right? Choices and consequence. Here's the line. If you step over this line, here's your consequence, and then you follow through on it. That's real simple. That's how they structure it. So this mom begins to do this, and she begins to structure her child's choice and consequence so that when he chose poorly and she followed through on the consequence, here's the thing, it would negatively affect the child's quality of life. Again, when we discipline parents and we take it personally for our reputation, how many parents, when they're disciplining, they're all flustered and frustrated and irritated and all these emotions are happening, right? But this mom simply said, here's your choice. If you do this and you have here's your consequence. And it would negatively affect the child's quality of life, not the parents. With me on that? Right? So she began to do this, and the child's bad behavior became a problem for who? The child, right? And the child began using this phrase, well, this is just too bad for me, right? Or, you know, you can say, this is a bummer for me. You know, the child would be like, that's a bummer for me. Yeah, and the mom would say, yeah, I'm sorry that you're not able to play football. I'm sorry you're not able to play Xbox. I'm sorry you're not able to have your phone or whatever. It's too bad for you, right? Because the child began to own their behavior and the power that they had over their life and their choices. Too bad for me. So this mom, again, by structuring choices and consequences, was able to get her child to get to this point where they understood that their poor choices and their consequences, it was too bad for them, right? It didn't affect the parent's quality of life. The parent wasn't all frustrated and worked up. Here's a choice. Here's a consequence. And then that's too bad for you, right? So with discipline and behavior, you structure choices and consequences. You follow through. You have to follow through. And this just takes some time. This doesn't happen like overnight. This takes a couple weeks, months to understand, for kids to understand that you're serious about your choices and consequences. And then this was really helpful for me. I didn't know this. This was something new for me. Cloud and Townsend say that you empathize with them post-discipline, right? You empathize with them post-discipline. And what happens is you reestablish an emotional connection with your child. You don't leave them in this, I would say, this kind of mini traumatic state. So the mom would say something like, I'm sorry that you're not able to go out with your friends tonight. That must be a real disappointment for you.
You're not sorry.
Huh?
You're not sorry. You're just saying that.
You're sorry for them.
No,
because
that's what they say to me.
Huh? You would say that?
The kids say that. I say, I love you. They say, no, you don't love me.
Say, I'm sorry. I mean, you know, if they believe it or not, Brian, from your heart, that's what you're sharing. From my heart, that's how my heart feels. My heart feels sorrow and disappointment that you're not able to go out. And that's how I feel. And you're not able to tell me how I feel. That's okay. Right? But you empathize, parents, you empathize with them post-discipline and you reestablish that emotional connection with them. I apologize. It's a bummer that you're not able to do this. But you reestablish. So to me, there's, I guess you can go, if that doesn't work for you, you can always go back to this, right? I mean, this is biblical too, if you just want to just...
Basically, you're emphasizing that you don't really want to be punishing them, but you have to in order to secure your right as their parent.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Is that helpful? Simple. Not simple. I mean, it's simple, but it's the hardest thing for us as parents to do. But I Yeah.
God disciplines us. I think we've all experienced some of God's discipline because He loves us. He doesn't want us to be reprobates.
I will preload that and say, well, if you really did love me, then why don't you act like you love me all the time? And that's what's preloaded with me. It's like, do nice things with me, spend quality time, not be angry at me.
Yeah, Feeler would say this, and I didn't put this up there, but he says, as parents, it's better to spend less time playing bad cop. What does he say? I just had it right here. Spend less time playing cop to bad behavior and more time playing midwife to good behavior. Okay. So I didn't put that. That was kind of a little bonus there. Spend less time playing cop to bad behavior and more time playing midwife to good behavior. So let me move on here. And we can come back to this in discussion time because I know that this is a big struggle for parents that we want to do this right. Right? We don't want to be angry. We don't want to act out of emotion. We want to do this right for our children. We want to, because we love them. Cass is right. Because we love them. Because we want to, for them to grow in proper ways. When we get on to influence, there's this incredible verse that Peter writes, and he says, you've probably heard this verse before, but he says, in your hearts, revere Christ as Lord. And then he says this, always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. But do this with gentleness and respect. When Peter writes this, he has this assumption behind this statement, right? The assumption behind this statement is that people who are following Jesus are living in a countercultural way, are living in such a way that other folks are interested in why they're doing and why they're living in a certain way, right? So always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you. Well, why would people ask you? Because they're curious. Because you've chosen to live your life in a different way. You've chosen to, probably in the first century when Peter would write this, you've chose to share your possessions, all your possessions, right? You've chose to meet early every day of the week for prayer and to break bread. You've chose to welcome those who are outside your race or your economic status, right? And so Peter would say that you have to then be ready to give an answer because of this different life that you're living. When I talk about influence, right, I would say that in the same way with that the early Christians, and when Peter says this, that they were kind of living this alternative life and that people were curious about that, right? We are always influencing. We always have this influence that's going on with our children. And sometimes you use words, right? You're always influencing your children. Sometimes you use words. I'm sure you've all heard that phrase, more is caught than is taught. Kids just are watching what you're doing, right? Kids are just watching what you're doing. Rob Bell uses this quiz in his observations. We'll have fun with this one, okay? So think about your parents for a second. We're going to do a little quiz. Did your parents enjoy life or treat it as a general struggle? Was your parents' marriage marked with respect and love or distance and arguments? Was money a tool to be utilized or a resource that was fought over? Did work dictate family life or was the family at the center? Did your parents enjoy you or tolerate you? Did your parents stand up against the norms or just float around like dead fish? Did your parents prioritize Christ in their schedules and their finances and lives? How many people have like answers to all those questions right away? Right? Now, here's the thing is you were taught all sorts of things as a child, the same way your children are watching you. Right? You have such incredible influence over your children. I talk about this so much. This is why I would say this church gathering is so important. This is why I would say the women's fellowship is so important. This is why I'd say the men's fellowship is important. Because as parents, we have to continue to do the interior work to make sure that as we're influencing and teaching our child, we're giving them something that's healthy and whole and righteous. Right? This is the... That's what I'm saying. This is the interior work that we have to continue to do. God, teach me. God, show me. I want to humble myself. I want to learn from Jesus. I want to study the scriptures. We have to continue to do that interior work. That way, when we're influencing our children, right, that we're not just like thinking, man, life is such a struggle, right? That our marriage is marked with respect and love. That money is just a tool that God has entrusted us with that we get to utilize, that we put our family at the center, that work doesn't dominate our family, that we enjoy our children, that we stand up against the norms. I got to get to that one in a second. And that we prioritize Christ in our schedules, right? You were taught all these things as a child in the same way your children are watching you. One important area of influence is, do I have a slide for this? Yeah. I got to talk about raising good punks. This is a good one. This is one of the 17 observations. In wisdom, there's three types of wisdom. There's what's called pre-conventional wisdom, and that's you're just teaching children to do the right thing, right? So, for example, I want to teach my daughter Julia, she's in first grade. I want to teach her to be a good listener and to be respectful of her teacher at school, right? Now, that's just teaching her to do the right thing. Julia, I want you to do that. Now, there comes a time when she's actually able to do that thing, to do that. That's conventional wisdom, right? Doing the right thing in the right moment, right? So that she would, when she's in school and she's sitting there in the class, she's listening to her teacher, and she's respecting her teacher, right? That's just kind of the conventional wisdom. And then there's what's called post-conventional wisdom, where you stand up to what is right or accepted. So, for example, in this teacher analogy, imagine down the line she's in a high school class, and maybe a teacher in one of her classes is degrading a minority group, right? Maybe this teacher is criticizing my daughter's confidence and her faith in Jesus, right? Maybe this teacher is being really offensive and unnecessarily harsh toward another student. Now, she has the conventional wisdom, which is to listen and to respect, but then she has a different kind of wisdom where you stand up to what is quote-unquote right or accepted, right? It's right and accepted right now in a lot of schools to get high and to go do drugs, right? I want my daughter to stand up, to have the post, to be a good punk to stand up against that.
How do you teach them to do it the right way instead of the wrong way, though?
Well, I'll tell you in about 20 years. right? Yeah, she'll be 27 by then. I'll have a good knowledge if she made it or not. I don't know. Hopefully by 27 she'll have a lot of things figured out. Let me share this quick story about this example, about post-conventional wisdom, about my dad being a good punk. When my dad was out here, and he shared this, that my sister and my brother-in-law are going through a divorce. They have an old son. His name's Tristan. And 18. Older son. An older son, Tristan. So Tristan's 18. He's super into cars right now. So my dad says, Tristan, let's go do something for your car. So Tristan says, yeah, dad, Pop-Pop is what he calls him. I need to get my lights tinted, right? His headlights and his taillights. Now, Brian, can you do that legally in California?
No.
That's illegal, right? But my dad pays for it. My dad pays for Tristan, his grandson, to have his lights illegally tinted. Now, I love this story, right? Because my father understood in that moment, right? This is that kind of post-conventional wisdom, right? My father understood in the moment that yes, you're not supposed to tint headlights or taillights, right? It's illegal. But my father understood in that moment that what was more important was that emotional connection with his grandson during this tumultuous time, this difficult time, right? So the post-conventional wisdom, and again, this is something, this might be a little bit, I don't know what stage your children are in. Some we're just teaching our kids to do the right thing. Some we're actually watching our kids do the right thing. And maybe you have older kids that you're like, hey, you got to stand up to what's right or to what is accepted. And to, you know, even little kids, even, you know, Julia, when kids are getting excluded at the lunch table, you got to stand up to that, right? I know that my daughter, Julia, I've been thinking a lot about this for her. I am going to need to teach my daughter, Julia, to be a punk because she's so sweet and she's so compliant and she's so docile. At some point, I'm going to have to teach her, like, to stand up to the man. And that's something that's coming down the line for me. Is Jeanette and Alice, I'm pretty sure I'm not going to have to teach them to stand up to the man. They're doing just fine on that on their own. But Julia, yes. Okay, last one.
Does punk stand for anything?
Just a punk. Just like, you know, the way that the punks kind of always stood up to the system. Just kind of that, you know, just kind of, yeah.
There's so many different versions to that word.
A lot of different versions, yeah. We'll save that for.
There's ears in
the other room. Yeah, we'll save that for the extra. The last one is about yielding, and again, this is from Cloud and Townsend too in their book. And they're at a seminar, and one lady says, "Hey, what is the one best thing I can teach my children?" This sounds like a question I would have asked. What is the one thing that I need to know about my children, right? And Cloud and Townsend say, "Well, I don't know if there's one thing." They say there's probably a lot of things, but he said maybe one of the things that ends up right at the very top of the list is to teach your child how to lose. And then the parent kind of retorts back, but I want my child to win, right? Parents, we want our children to win, right? Come on, Mark, you with me on that? And they say, but they're going
to lose. You have to lose in order to win.
And they better know how, right? And how many parents, again, you've watched your child lose, right? It could be something silly like a sports game. It could be something very difficult, like a relationship, a failed relationship, a lost relationship. It could be a project. It could be they've lost a job. They were cut from a sports team. They didn't get a part in a play or recital. We've watched our children lose at something, right? We live in a fallen world, and unfortunately, things are going to go wrong for your perfect little child, right? And how will your child respond to that? How will your child respond to loss? Here's why I call it yielding. Because, well, first off, because I needed a Y word, and DIL parenting didn't sound as cool as DIY parenting. But in the freeway of life, a lot of times when you get on the freeway, it's pretty smooth, right? And people are friendly and kind, and you put your blinker on and they let you over. A lot of times when you get on the freeway, it's not so kind, is it? Right? And you're trying to get onto the freeway, and somebody is either flipping you off, or they're honking their horn at you, or the very classic, they're ignoring you when they know that you're right next to you, right? And you have to learn, kids have to learn, you have to learn as an adult, whether you're just going to veer over and crash your car into them and just, right? Or if you're going to respond, or if you're going to learn how to yield to get onto the freeway, right? Yield to all the cars that are kind of going on in life. Kids need to learn this. This is an important thing. They need to learn how will your child respond when they bump into reality? This is the reality of life right here, right? And all of our little kids are getting on and off the freeway, and they need to learn how to respond when life doesn't go their way. They have this process. Cloud and Townsend have this process for it, for helping children embrace reality. Here it is. Teaching your children how to lose. One of the most important things you can teach your children, according to these fine, brilliant men. First, they say this. When reality strikes, right, the first thing often that kids will do is they'll protest it or they'll push back, right? They'll say something along the lines of this. That's not fair. That's not right, right? This isn't normal. So the first thing that happens is when they bump into something, they get cut from a sports team, they lose a relationship, they get fired from a job, they this or that, all this thing. They protest it or they push back, right? So, but what happens is, what happens next? A problem's still there, right? The reality remains. They're still cut from the sports team. They still didn't make that part in the recital. They still, the relationship is still broken up, right? The reality remains. The poor grade is still there. It's interesting, and I notice this a lot as a junior high pastor, and I feel like, this is a little side note, Brian, you might even have some knowledge on this. I feel like parents, or Robin too, they try and change reality for their children. Are you with me on that? You know what I'm talking about here? So here's how that works, right? Here's how that works. So the kid gets that bad grade in school, right? On your test or whatever. And then what happens? It's the teacher's fault, and I'm going to move my child to another classroom. I'm going to move my child to another school. I'm going to transfer my child out of the district. They literally want to change reality for their student. They get cut from the sports team, right? I saw this so often as a junior high pastor. They get cut from the sports team. Now, what's the problem? The coach doesn't like them. It's the whole AYSO that's the problem. It's the, you know what I'm saying? And they literally, I've seen parents, they are reorganizing reality around their children instead of their children around what's reality. That you're going to lose. You're going to get poor grades. You're going to get cut. You're not going to be good enough, right? The freeway is going to keep moving, and you're going to have to figure out how to. So I've seen that what happens is there's reality. There's something difficult, the bad grade, the relationship, the job, whatever. They push back. It's not fair. It's not right. It's not normal. But reality's still there. We can't change reality. It's just, we can try and change reality, but that's going to create a whole other set of problems. And then the third thing that they say is that the child hopefully will able to metabolize reality. What they mean by this, anybody remember 10th grade bio? When you take food in, you metabolize the good and the waste gets let out, right? So you're hoping that as your child embraces this difficulty, whatever it might be, they embrace and they feed off, okay, there's something good that's in here, right? And then there's all the stuff, all the negative, all the waste, all the garbage. I need to let that go, right? This is, I would say, in this stage, there's two kind of things. There could be grief involved in this, especially for probably older children as they grieve these things. There could be grief involved in this. And then as parents, this is a really important stage to ask a lot of questions, right? This is important as they help them metabolize this reality. So they get cut from the sports team, right? Man, what did you learn out of this? What about it was painful? Was it that your reputation? Was it that you're going to have to face the kids? I remember getting cut. I have this horrible memory of getting cut from a sports team when I was in seventh grade baseball team. Because when I was in seventh grade and baseball was life, I still remember riding my, like literally, I'll probably tear up thinking about this. I remember riding my bike from the baseball field home, crying the whole way home. And,
We're all laughing over here.
And so, you know, as a parent, I don't have this memory of like my parents like metabolizing this reality, but you know, asking good questions. I remember my parents being there for me. What was painful about it, Eric? Are you embarrassed about your reputation that you're gonna have to go to school and everybody's gonna know you were cut from the sports team? Where did you mess up? Were you lazy? Are you not talented enough? Why did this happen? What's confusing? What good might come out of this, Eric? You know, so anyway, help them metabolize it. Again, parents, this is the perspective piece that we talked about a couple weeks ago. Children look to you for perspective, right? And then the last thing that Cloud and Townsend say about this is that there's the problem solving and the resolution. The biggest thing when you teach your... What's that? Did I spell that wrong?
What's griff?
Griff. G-R-I-E-F. Yeah, I did spell that wrong. I before E. My fault. The biggest thing here is the problem solving or the resolution. And in this, you're teaching your children, this is so important for children, is you're teaching them grit, right? You're teaching them perseverance, helping your kids achieve goals, teaching them the difference between it's hard and I can't, right? My dad talked about this a couple weeks ago. He said one of the traits in common of all these successful kids is that the parents taught their kids grit and perseverance. Cloud and Townsend say that one of the most important things you can teach your children is you teach them how to lose. So this morning, we talked about discipline, we talked about influence, and we talked about yielding as parents or as children. How do we do on that? Is that enough for the morning? I think that's... Yeah, we could.
I've got a pastor friend in Colorado, about my age, he's a year younger than me. And he has two adult sons, married. One of them committed adultery and then was reconciled to his wife, made a recommitment to marriage. The other one committed adultery and they divorced. He took that very hard. Responsibility, which I don't think he should have, you know, because they were both adults and made improper choices. So it's a big thing, you know, when, as we are parents, particularly older children, can we really say that 70% is now their fault and only 30% is our fault? Don't know, but that verse came to me out of Proverbs. Proverbs 22, verse 6, which says, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. So,
yeah.
I know that I have a solution to what the true percentage is, but I think there's a lot of responsibility that goes in the front upload in how you train a child.
Mm-hmm.
So, this is good.
Yeah. Let's do this. I got a couple of discussion questions.
Child, don't worry, they're going to come back. That they use it as, don't worry, they're going to come back, because I've moaned and groaned about my adult child turning away from the Lord, and they bring up that scripture. Well, you train them up in the way they will not depart. He already has departed. So, like, how is that encouraging?
Well, the fat lady still has to sing, right? In other words,
we won't know.
Story's not over.
We won't know till we know. That's why they're saying that. Got it.
Well, from my past experience,
hold on one second. What I'd like to do with this before we get into all that particular thing, I want to throw up a couple discussion questions, and there's obviously one of them is you can talk about that 30-70-30 responsibility matrix, and you can do this in a small group, and then the discipline, influence, or yielding, what point was most helpful for you and why. Share a few positive and negative influences from your parents. Do you see that seeping into your parenting? And then maybe share about a painful moment with your child losing. How did you react, and what might you go back and change, or what would you like to change about that? So let's just do a few minutes on that small group, and then if we want to get back to the 70-30 or some of those things, we can. But talk about those for just a little bit, and then we'll... Parents of the year right there. There we go.